Pauline McKinnon is sitting here in front of me, slightly startled, wondering what she's wandered into. Never mind. She wrote the book and knew the job was dangerous when she took it. Hooray for her. Welcome, Pauline.
Thanks very much, Richard.
Living calm in a busy world, and there's a shot of a seascape and a man tossing something to a dog, which says to me, all right, I'm slightly irritated already. I just don't have time to be wandering around on the beach. I'm too stressed. Let's talk about, I don't know, where do we start this journey? Let's talk about stress for a moment. Stress now seems to be the most common word. Oh, it's stress. It's the stress. It's the stress of modern living. Stress nowadays. Stress can kill you. Stress affects our physical state as well as our emotional state. We can link some illnesses directly to stress. It seems to me, though, that that stress is inevitable. And our conversation about stress is wrong. That we shouldn't be saying, oh, I'm stressed. What we're actually talking about is our inability to cope with the stress we feel. That there would be stress if I was lying on a desert island. I'd find a way to have stress. Stress is a natural way of being. And in some ways, stress helps me perform. But my ability to cope with stress seems to be lacking. What do you think?
I think you've summed that up really well, Richard. I think that's perfect.
Okay. Well done to me. So why is it that we're so out of touch with something that is a natural part of us? Stress is a natural part. Why are we so out of touch with our ability to manage that?
I think we become overreactive, and perhaps as a general population, we've become overreactive. And, you know, the way you used that word stress a little while ago, you know, yes, I'm stressed, this is stressful, that sort of attitude is prevalent in society, isn't it? So I think we need to turn that around a bit and recognise what you've said. Stress can be motivational. It was Hans Selye back in the 1920s, Dr. Hans Selye, who actually used the terminology to describe stress as being the spice, can be the spice of life. So stress can be our motivating force, but it can also bring us down in the sense that if we're not coping with whatever's going on around us, then we'll start to get anxious, then we'll start to get tense, and then we'll start to get other problems.
Physiological changes flow on.
Absolutely.
So it's a little bit like salt at the dinner. A little bit nice, too much ruins the meal.
Yeah, absolutely.
Interesting. I use the words mindfully. I was saying, I'm stressed about, I'm stressed, the stress is making me this, this is stressing me. It's not. None of those things are true. It is the way I choose to react to incidents.
Absolutely.
The stress doesn't exist. Yeah. And an object doesn't stress me. What I'm actually talking about is the way I choose to react to a situation or a thing.
Yeah, there can be stressors, and those are those situations or things. You know, things happen in life.
But some people aren't stressed in the same situations.
Absolutely.
So they're not universal. It's not like, oh, you'll always be stressed like this.
Absolutely.
If they ran heart monitors on top surgeons and they monitored them at moments when the surgery wasn't going well, and the top flight surgeons' heart rate and pulse and blood pressure didn't vary. It kept absolutely rock steady throughout all the tense emergency moments. This isn't going well. We've got bleeds, blah, blah, blah. Rock solid, like a Rolls Royce. And I thought that was fascinating because what that says is that situations that you and I would be, someone's life, here we go.
That's right.
It reminded me that stress isn't universal. We can't say everything will stress everyone like this.
Definitely not. We're all subject to our own reaction to whatever it is going on around us.
So how, through meditation, can we learn to be aware of our own stresses, and how do we manage them? Why does meditation help us manage that?
Well, I think in this case, and what I've talked about in this book, is that what we're doing is giving the brain a rest from stimulus. And when we do that, obviously something changes, and we don't exactly know what changes yet in the brain, but something changes to make it easier for people to firstly feel calm within themselves. And when we're calm within ourselves, we can't be tense and anxious, because you can't be tense and anxious and relaxed at the same time.
Can't be calmly anxious.
No, that's right. So if we keep calm, if we maintain that calmness, which is why I've used the expression living calm, so that it becomes a natural part of our life, then the stressful things, or the potentially stressful things that occur around us, still occur, but our levels of reactivity are not going to be nearly as high.
So we're able to note the things, but we're not tied to the wheel of them.
Exactly.
And so we're not spun around. I see this person in front of me as a non-communicative idiot.
Exactly.
I can note that. Mm. I don't have to react to that.
Mm. Mm, exactly. We don't have to get so involved.
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting. So stillness meditation. Let's now talk about Dr. Mears.
And for his work, he died about 26 years ago. He forged the pathway to the use of meditation as a therapeutic modality. He saw that really human beings have this capacity within ourselves, something we can activate and use to our own advantage. And he went out on a limb, really, and said, look, this is what I want to teach people to do so that they can help themselves. So what he taught was essentially that the brain needs rest when it's overstimulated and overcrowded and overactive and never rested. Obviously, the anxiety and tension levels will then rise, and so the coping facilities are diminished. So what he wanted to do was empower people, really, in that way. And I went to him myself as a patient many, many years ago for my intense stress, anxiety, depression, tension, whatever, agoraphobia it was actually. Mm. And that was, quite a horrendous experience. And I'd been down many pathways looking for relief from the symptoms. I learned a lot about myself in doing so, but the symptoms, the stressor symptoms, didn't change until I met Dr. Mears. And then it was like some little miracle happened, really.
You're chatting with Pauline McKinnon. She's written the book Living Calm in a Busy World. It's not her first book. It talks about stillness meditation in the Mears tradition. Isn't that interesting? We're just seeing in the news that the Olympic team has now changed the rules by which they prescribe, and they're going to stop prescribing Stilnox and similar sedatives to athletes to help them sleep. They train so much, they're so adrenalised, sleep, it becomes an issue, and they're in short hours as they wake up for training. So what they've been doing is giving them sleeping tablets to assist in that process.
Yes.
Isn't that fascinating that they don't know, or they choose not to say, you know what, we can meditate. I can teach you a system of meditation that will ease this process.
Mm, precisely. Well, I think that's, taking the pill is a little bit like the product of our busy world, isn't it, really? And it's an easy, or it appears to be an easy option, but we don't know what the long-term effects are or the side effects are or the productivity effects are, in fact. And I would love to see them all practicing stillness meditation instead of taking a Stilnox tablet.
I see what you did there. That's gold. Okay, let's talk for a moment. What defines stillness meditation as opposed to any other form of meditation? Mm. What are the key tenets of it? It's secular. It's one. What else?
Secular is important, I think, because it appeals to a very wide range of people in that sense. It's effortless. It's about experiencing one's own inner calmness rather than doing something to get to that point of calmness.
Really? I don't feel any inner calm. You kidding? I wouldn't know inner calm from a hole in the ground. Have you seen what's going on in my life right now? There's so many things. There's no inner calm. How do I find it? I can't. What are you talking about?
Yes, I've heard all that before too. I've had amazing success with people who sound a bit like you just sounded then. I've often said to people, I've seen adult men in tears sobbing and saying, I won't be able to sit still. I simply can't sit in a chair. I can't sit still, etc., etc. But we get through it and we see tremendous results. I think it's about accepting that there is the power there within us, and it's about taking the risk to find that and to make the commitment to it, because without commitment to anything in life, we're not going to succeed if we don't say, well,
really?
Okay, here I am.
Yeah. Damn. And it is a practice. I think the other thing to talk about is that it's a practice, that you don't get it right like golf or tennis or anything else. Mm. You don't just go out and go, bang, oh, that ball's in the hole in one shot. That wasn't easy. What else? It doesn't work like that. It is a practice, and therefore you won't be as good at it at the start as you are once you've worked on it.
Yeah, precisely. And also you'll get a lot of variation along the way. And sometimes people they're tempted to give up because they'll see, oh, nothing much is happening. What am I doing?
This is stupid. It's the most common thing you hear about a yoga class. How was yoga? Mm. Yeah, it was good. Except at the end, we all had to just lie still on the floor and experience our bodies. I had that go. I fell asleep. I thought about the shopping. I had to be somewhere else. I got bored. One of the most important moments of the class slides past because you're so not able to just
be.
Be.
Just be. Just to let go and to just be. Yes. So important.
Because even as you're saying it, I can feel, as Pauline's saying that to you, I can feel you resisting and just going, no, I can't. Just, what are you talking about? I've got too much shopping. The kids, I think, is that glass they're eating? What the hell? Okay, right. So how do we begin the practice of stillness meditation? Mm. It's got a little bit like Zen meditation. I'm not comfortable when I'm doing it. Well, fortunately, no one's coming up and randomly whacking me with a stick to make sure I'm on track.
No, we don't do that.
But no. I'm not comfortable.
No, you probably aren't comfortable when you begin. That's absolutely right. Some people are. Some people are very natural and they get a wonderful surprise because they never thought they could do it.
No, I mean physically. We're not supposed to be comfortable in the practice. Is that right?
Oh, physically, yes, slightly uncomfortable. Yeah. Not like on a bed of nails, but just slightly uncomfortable.
Like a hard chair or something.
A firm chair and a disciplined posture, because discipline in the body, obviously, will lead to a kind of a calm discipline within the mind, if you like. So we sit in a particular way. When people come to the classes, we always prepare them, give them a little pre-visit sort of experience so that they know what's going to happen over that period of time. Dr. Mears taught the use of calming touch, like therapeutic touch, which is very unique to his approach. And the idea being that in touch we can say an awful lot more than we can by telling people a whole lot of things in words, and touch doesn't activate the mental critical faculties nearly to the same extent as discussion.
Touch is fascinating. If I'm teaching you something and I touch you or show you the action as I'm teaching you, you'll remember it far better than if I just told you it and made you do it.
Mm, absolutely.
There's something, and what we're talking about, I guess, Pauline, is and when we talk about the meditation, is a physiological response.
Definitely.
This isn't kind of made up fairies at the bottom of the garden. This is a physiological response.
Definitely.
And we can chart it, we can see it, we can see its outcomes.
Mm, definitely.
How long do I meditate for? What, do I sit around? Is there music playing?
No.
I'm on a chair.
No music.
No music. Oh, God. Why isn't there music? Isn't there supposed to be pan flutes or something going?
No, awful pan flutes. Oh, I mean, I'm a musician too, but not pan flutes with meditation. Thank you very much.
So why don't we have music going during meditation?
Well, because the mind, the brain is still going to tune into that and pick up on it and do something with it, isn't it? You know, feel compelled to listen or hear or try to get rid of it. People often say, oh, I'm trying to get rid of my thoughts. I'm trying to block out the thoughts. Well, that's all about trying. What we're doing here is just learning to be, just letting go and learning to be.
Moonlight touches everything, clings to nothing.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
That's rather than I think of a brick wall. Damn, now I'm just thinking of brick walls.
That's right. Huh. Yes.
How long do I sit around on my hard chair for?
Well, once you've mastered the idea and once you've brought your stress, we'll call it stress, levels down, 10 minutes morning, 10 minutes evening is a good program, good basic practice program. But in the early stages of learning, you probably need to come and do at least 16 sessions with me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I've got, is it all right to have the phone on?
No.
Okay. Just checking.
That look on your face.
just asking. Just asking the question. No need to bump my head off. I thought you're supposed to be calm and in touch.
That's right.
Living Calm in a Busy World is the book I'm playing with Pauline about. Pauline McKinnon has written a book on stillness meditation, which is, as you can tell, it's a form of meditation that is secular, that is more, what can I say here, medicinal, deliberately, than perhaps other forms of meditation because of its origins, and therefore it looks at outcomes and practices and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Are we able to chart anything with meditation, you know, blood pressure, all of that kind of stuff? Have we done that kind of research?
No, I haven't, and I wish I had, and I still want to. So if there's anyone listening out there who wants to do their PhD or something, please contact me. We've monitored numerous clients on several occasions over several years, and what we see is a 54% reduction in the client symptoms within their 12 to 16 visits.
And it could be anything, of course. Because the annoying thing about that, it's a great statistic, one in two, good. Yeah. But there's so many other factors at work.
Oh, that's
right. And we don't know which one triggers. We can say, oh, you did the class and half of them got better. Mm. But we can't say that the class was the thing. could be that they also ate potato during that period, and potato helped them. So we don't know, do we?
Well, we don't know for sure, but I suppose that's life, isn't it? We can never be totally sure of anything in that sense, in that physiological, ever growing, ever moving element of life. But I think the types of people that we see at the clinic, who are at the centre, who are in fact generally suffering from some level of anxiety. And I mean, I'm not categorising people. I see people all across the board, and I include myself in that. We're looking at anxiety reduction and the symptoms of anxiety or depression or stress. And that's the, I suppose, the common denominator. So that's where we're seeing the biggest shift.
And this is the most major change in their life
absolutely.
Over that period.
Yes, that's
you know,
right.
I get a sense too that with this, it's not just meditation, but it's a sense of ownership. I see that I'm stressed. I'm going to own that feeling, and I'm going to do something about it, and I'm going to set a goal and work to it. It's that process, not just stay still.
No, that's right. Well, I think, as I said earlier, we need to be committed, and I think that people gain a tremendous amount by accepting that they have some calm control over their well-being. You know, they're not just randomly being tossed
leaves
around.
Leaves in the stream.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
I think that's a really important point. The out of control is often what you feel with stress.
Oh, definitely.
I'm out of control. My life's out of control.
Definitely.
I can't get a centre. I haven't got centre.
That's right. And the symptoms surrounding stress and anxiety and depression are very, very alarming, really.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
So people get that real sense of being buffeted in life.
Fascinating. Mm. Living Calm in a Busy World is the book. We haven't talked a lot specifically about what's in the book, but you will learn who Ainsley Mears is. You'll also learn some methodology, and you'll learn more about the practice of stillness meditation. And you can read it and think to yourself, oh, rubbish, I'll use this to strike that child who's annoying me. Or you can think to yourself, there might be something in this. Pauline's probably not just making it up. Pauline McKinnon is who we've been chatting to. Pauline, thank you so much. What have you got? Have you got a...
just a little workshop
A workshop
up.
That's coming up. Okay. And it is coming up Thursday, the 12th of July. And it's at the Box Hill Community Arts Centre. There's a workshop there. You need to call the Box Hill Community Arts Centre.
No, our centre.
Oh, okay. So you can go to the website stillnessmeditation.com.au and you'll find out more details there. Pauline, thank you so much.
Thank you, Richard.
774 ABC Melbourne.